You can edit that.
Yeah. Yay!
All right. Hi, guys.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Breaking It Down with
Brandy,
Camille,
and Katie.
Yay.
We are so excited about our guest today. He has been in the business for 22 years, and he has worked in all formats, including film, television, theater, short film, digital, video games, and commercials. He has also spent time working at the largest theater on the West Coast, Center Theater Group of LA. He currently has several projects in development and a couple in pre-production. He's a casting director, he's a producer, and we have him here today. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you Chadwick Strzok.
Woo!
Hello, Chadwick. Thank you for being here with us today.
Lucky to be here. Thank you.
So, Chadwick, what has been your journey to becoming a casting director?
My journey is actually rather unique. Throughout my young life, I was more of an athlete, less of an academic. And then finally, you know, after getting into college, it took me a few years, but then I got into broadcasting, writing, and acting, and I got into this internship program that my junior year in college had me coming out to work at Paramount Studios.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
The casting director is a huge name person. I prefer probably not use her name or his name.
Yeah, no worries.
Great office. We covered, you know, major sci-fi shows and major urban shows, the sci-fi shows out of Paramount, and then this particular casting director had three offices at the time, so there was a ton of, you know, great actors and great projects and a lot of information flying around. Really fast, great learning experience.
That must have been so cool too, like coming right out of college and like being on like this huge lot with like all these huge people.
Yeah,
that's so cool. That's awesome.
It was nice. Unique because although I was working on a series at the time, Tom Cruise was doing Vanilla Sky, and so we had all the bells and whistles, you know, Sherry Lansing having Christmas there, etc. You know,
nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a tremendous experience.
Excellent.
Cool. Well, what ultimately made you want to be a casting director? You said you started in broadcast and then there was some sort of transitional period, it sounds like.
I've always been a huge geek of actors, more so in admiring them versus wanting to be one. And then when I had the opportunity to come out here to work, and the job right away was something that was very meaningful and it really matched what I was kind of into, you know. I'm really good at compartmentalizing and remembering things and quickly learned the town. But yeah, it was something that once I knew it was available to me, there was no turning back, and it just increased my level of reading, my level of fitness, everything just kind of became much better, and blinders were on. And then I came out here, worked for that same office, and then after like about a year of being out here shortly, you know, probably 8 months, I started working at the Center Theater Group, the Mark Taper and Amundsen, mm-hmm. the collection of two theaters, mm-hmm. Mark mm-hmm. Taper, a little bit more contemporary in tradition, and classic pieces, and awesome pieces normally at the Amundsen, and I got to work with Sir Peter Hall, the Shakespearean director, who's amazing.
Wow.
And Neil really Simon cool. was doing the original casting of a play called The Dinner Party, where we cast, mm-hmm. you know, really great prestigious theater actors, but then also Henry Winkler and John Ritter. So we cast the Fonz and Jack Tripper.
Oh,
and
that's
Neil
cool.
Simon
that's
play
so
called
cool.
The Dinner Party. You know, Francis Excellent. Conroy, Edward Herman. It was just
I love best. Francis Conroy.
And yeah, and then after working there, I went back and worked for the same the Paramount office where I worked for a total of 3 years. I worked about 7 years, primarily in series content, and I immediately was, you know, ready to do movies. An opportunity to work on Herbie Fully Loaded with Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, mm-hmm. so cool.
Yeah,
I love that.
It's
so good.
And Just Friends with Ryan Reynolds, two huge movies at the time, and it was like a great transition, but again, it was a really unique learning curve because here I came over after being in this like very academic, you know, the major sci-fi show that I was working mm-hmm. on was for classically trained actors. So I was very immersed in the truly crafty actor pool, the thespians, and then working at the theater, the same thing. But then migrating over to Herbie Fully Loaded Just Friends, it was just a completely different thing, sketch comedy. So I quickly, you know, of course, the first 2 weeks I was trying to bring in Shakespearean actors to come in and do long-form comedy. And, quickly learned an adjustment there and went on a run of comedy projects with Rick. And Rick is, you know, famously known as the Farrelly Brothers casting director. And mm-hmm. Without Rick, I wouldn't be a casting director. He's, you know, major catalyst in kind of where I'm at today. I kind of copycat him in a little bit of a way. I think he's a tremendous casting director. And a lot of his philosophies I've taken on to advance myself.
And, that's wonderful.
2007, I started my own company. And since then, I, you know, had a really huge year in 2007 where I did 7 films. And then the financial depression came around and I got thrown into an environment where I was forced to do smaller budget projects. And with that, I was kind of just collecting some producer credits. And now I've matured into being a producer.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I'm not bulldozing this moment here.
No,
we're good. But we're all like, tell us more.
The movie went to Sundance in 2016. I was a co-producer and casting director, and it's called Outlaws and Angels. It had Francesca Eastwood, Clint Eastwood's daughter, Luke Wilson, and Chad Michael Murray, Terry Polo. Really great casting route. But what was really exciting was the relationships that happened. It was a longer casting process, and it was never anything that was hard. It got better and better as we went along, and the harmony with the team and the leaders of the team really became the people that kind of give me the opportunities of where I'm at now.
Did you find doing both, you got to like know everybody more, like producing and casting, directing?
I think, you know, for me, I've always had a very careful way of tipping my, you know, sticking my nose into the smelly stuff, or however you want to say that. You know, I never want to fake the funk. I want to make sure that I'm instinctive and I know what I'm doing before I jump in. I understand how they could mess things up when people have ego. So I'm very team-oriented. I think what came from it best was the ability to feel comfortable taking over my role and really embracing, you know, sharing the information that I need to, and being a department head. I have a very secondary nature about me. I really enjoy mirroring other people and doing well in that regard. And I think the position allows me to do that. But throughout my growth, it was very difficult to kind of step up and be a little bit bolder. And, you know, as instincts grew, more opportunities came through, I became a wiser player. And now I'm starting to become that person in the room that is expected to kind of, you know, move the needle and bring something. And, you know, I have a kind of a mentality that I call inside the box and outside the box mentality. And before, it used to always just be inside the box. And so now there's many ways that I can flirt outside the box and bring productivity and efficiency and bring, you know, either exact or, again, thinking different than what we're looking for. You know, the through line for me when putting together a cast is that if it's a specific cast, you want to hit on all notes that's specified. But if it's just your traditional cast, trying to make it as diverse as possible.
Yeah.
Looking at roles where you can change them to, they're not just a male role or just a female role. The age is not a specific age. Obviously, heritage and social background is not an issue. The idea of just being diverse in the look and everything is so important. So my main thing is when I bring people into audition to find impact players. Impact players for me are the people that get the format. If you're in TV, they understand the TV format.
Right.
If they come in for film, they know how to breathe those lines and let the moments kind of create themselves and really bring a lot of life to the room. So if you get people that are very format friendly and impact players, you stay out of the way. You turn them loose and you let the magic happen. You want to have a bunch of different nuances and a bunch of different dynamic play, or you want a couple very specialized players. People might be coming in for parts they're not right for, but if they're an impact player and talented, you're going to be able to migrate them to somewhere else in the cast. And if you're a busy cast and you're a girl like I've been fortunate to be, you can always find work for that person. So the audition process for me is maybe not so much what's on the page, but the talent that you're bringing to the room.
Wonderful.
One last thing about that.
Yeah, of course.
In TV, the scripts were written so many times. And for me, TV is more of a precision-oriented experience. I mean, of course, it's charismatic. It's humanistic. And they want to see fluid acting, but most importantly, we want to see that you understand the format and you're not going to step out of the box or the framing of the camera.
Right.
But in film, we widen that camera. So TV, they've written it a million times, and we're measuring the words, the exact words, the timing of everything. You know, in film, these scripts might have been rewritten like 4 or 5 times, and the first time we're seeing the words come alive is in the lab, the audition room. So we identify with the characters, with the choices that the actors bring to the room, more so than what's on the page. Sometimes you have very finite, specific filmmaker directors that want their words to be perfectly read, but often in film, we're looking for the best actor.
It's a really good way to put that. So, jumping from that, so you've been around for forever, right? 22 years, you were saying, and you've seen a ton of auditions. What, in your opinion, makes a great audition?
For me, it's that person that knows themselves and has confidence and is the risk taker. For me, I've been saying this quite a bit lately, the risk taker is a forever evolving actor. You know, and a risk taker isn't a person that's just coming in and being loud or just going to do something different. it's coming in, looking at the role, and knowing what the inside-the-box choice is, and what can you do to flex that character? What can you do to make an impact in that role? Obviously, format is first, and then after that, turn yourself loose. We need a ton of fluid play in the audition. If there's moments that seem to be jagged, those become divots. If there's a body pause with the camera to follow them, if there's a word pause, if there's any kind of a pause, that takes us out of the moment. We want to see a nice fluid swing throughout the performance, but the person who comes to the room and takes the risks. Say everybody's coming in and yelling. We want somebody that's going to come in and not yell and have it all boil beneath the surface and bring subtleties. Or come in and yell, but yell in a way that's more impacting and not just raising your voice.
Right.
We're looking for someone to kind of just sample themselves in different roles. You know, the comedic actor that might have had something great in a comedic audition earlier in the week has a serial killer or a psychotic role down to the week in a drama. Can you take a dash of that? Can you take a dash of that? So for me, we're not always knowing if the person's taking a ton of risks or if that's what they do regularly. But for us, that keeps us interested and excited. And it's often very fresh when it comes to film. I mean, TV is such a localized kind of specificity often that you audition for. So in film, it's very wild card driven.
Nice. Interesting. Now, on the flip side of that, what has been some of the worst things you've seen actors come into an audition room and do?
I think it's just lack of preparation, you know? I mean, we don't necessarily mind if people come in and talk, but when they start talking and we understand that this is like a deterrent because they don't know what they're doing and they're kind of trying to take a pulse on the room or trying to have us give them a nugget, it's not that we don't want to share that. We want people to be great, but often when you give somebody an exact note or some kind of thing, you're going to see a contrived action or physicality or vocals or all these things together when trying to get to the through line of it all. The discovery part in having it feel as real as possible is great in the room. So, I don't know. You see people come to the room and just the lack of preparation is just transparent. They it's not only being not prepared, maybe overly prepared in one direction.
Right.
You know, if you go to get some direction in the room, we need a malleable player, and malleability is based upon the format again. But we want to see that person that, you know, might have looked at it in polar opposite ways, in multiple dynamic ways. You know, looking at it for a vocal way, looking at it for a body language way. Let's see what this person's doing. There's so many little tiny things. Just flaring your eyes off to the right if there's a nervous thing going on and everybody else isn't doing that, but it's coming off very organic, could be very cool.
Right.
So trust yourself a lot of the time, too.
Excuse me. A little extended there.
Well, and I guess essentially that kind of also follows up with the idea of mistakes actors make in the audition room. If you're still making that mistake, but you make it seem as fluid and flawless as possible, it could come off as a very interesting character choice. But essentially, when you're watching something, you're like, oh, man, why are you doing that? Like, what, to our listeners out there, what would you say would definitely be, like, a big mistake that those actors
First of all, I want to pat you on the back. I couldn't compliment you more. You know, when an actor uses a moment, there's a thing that I say. You know, athletes make plays. Actors create moments. And in the world, it's a very diffused, confusing, often errorful place, you know? So it's like when somebody makes a mistake and they use it, often it can really kind of bring a punch to the scene and it can work. But mistakes that people make in the room often are wanting to start over again, just clearly making it known that we know that there's a mistake. It could be as simple as a body implosion, like, oh, shucks, you know? Anything like that just immediately pops the bubble and takes us out of the moment, you know? And again,
it's like apologizing.
It's a repeating of that tape that we watch several times over, so it's not just that one moment that we live in the room. It's shared with that executives we are trying to...
I've heard before some casting directors say, if it's in the beginning of the scene, the very, very beginning, and you're... mess up the very first line because you're just not in that moment, it's okay to say, may I start again? But once it starts going, not to do that. Do you not feel that way? Or is it different
more
for your office?
No. I feel like that's the great thing. I think it's the idea of like getting like midway or towards the end and then when you do it. But, you know, very encouraging. I think for me, in the process that I learned, you know, after working for amazing people, my takeaway was all those things that they kindly shared with me, but also... For me, I try less to be a sense of intelligence or a voice in the room and less needed, but to really cause a comfortable space, a really comfortable pad where actors can flex, always bringing readers to the room, always letting actors know that they can have the moment before. and most actors that I become friendly with understand that I'm going to be a fly on the wall and I'm just going to stay out of the way. So when an actor has that sensibility going into a room and knowing that it's a bit of a softy, I feel like they have the ability to kind of create a little bit more and have the flexibility. Often when it's a colder room, it doesn't work so well. So in the process, I mean, it wouldn't matter if you want to start over again halfway, three quarters. But yeah, in a very diligent process with limited time, yeah, closer to the beginning would be much more.
How do you feel about actors holding a script in their hand when they come in for an audition?
That's a good question.
I think it's great. I mean,
you doesn't bother you at all?
No. Okay. Oddly enough, it's weird because I've traveled over the years and all the out-of-town people are always like, no sides in your hand. And I've found that everybody that I've ever worked with that's a casting director always want the sides. Some of them are adamant about keeping the sides out of the framing. Mm-hmm. Some are not. Some don't mind if they're in the frame as long as you can use it to the temperament of what we're doing. Right. Like, you know, flick those pages with fierce energy if you're a fierce character, you know. So there's a way you can kind of utilize it to bring an intensity and a soften or an energy to the room.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. This is actually something I heard recently, too, is if say it's an emotional scene and an actor comes in, is it a big deal if they ask if they could slate at the end and they just go right into the... If you're recording them, is it okay to ask to slate after your audition, like at the end of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think you should always ask. When you come in to ask questions, you should have those prepared, easy-to-answer questions. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you're a conversationalist and you do like to talk, go in and just be your regular self. But some offices will frown upon that. But I think engaging with easy-to-answer questions, like where it's a yes and no kind of response, would be better. So then for you, the actor, you don't have to have any kind of extra conversation and you can get right into it, especially if you have your game face on.
Right.
For me, it's like if they have the game face on, just duck your head, everybody in the room, and just be ready to roll. And then I'll just get the team going with my hands.
Awesome.
So this is more of a fun question. If you could cast anything, what would you cast?
Past, present, future.
Yep.
In that being, I'll just go with the genre. It would have to be comedies. Mm. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just such a fun day in the office. You know, bad comedy is even good comedy on a day like that. And it's a format where people can actually get a lot better, a lot faster than they think. You know, and people that have an interest in comedy often could be a lot more funny than they think that they are. You know, because they just don't feel like they get the huge laughs. But
You know, so,
but yeah, it would be working in features for comedy.
That's awesome.
And what, on a personal note, what kind of hobbies do you have? What do you like to do when you are not casting?
You know, I mean, with being a father, it's my daughter's number one, and I'm, you know, trying to stay in shape, you know, reaching my middle ages, and watching as many movies as I possibly can. I think my biggest flaw as a creative person, on my free time, I don't watch enough network TV. I know who those actors are. I know who they are. Their profile and the way that they perform as actors, but I don't spend a great deal of time watching a lot of network TV.
Gotcha.
Other than that, it would be just, you know, reading, and this whole producing thing is really kind of taken off where I'm finding myself working 7 days a week.
It's a lot of work. So yeah.
Yeah.
Just meetings and trying to make things happen and
good.
Finding the money and such.
Better to be busy than bored.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that the truth? Well, now it's come to the time where we're going to ask you our rapid fire questions. These are the same questions that we ask all of our guests, okay? What is your biggest pet peeve in casting?
Not being format prepared, you know, not being prepared for the proper format. You know, going in for film, you adore all these actors that give great performances, but if it doesn't feel film friendly, it's hard for us to have that translate because it needs to balance with the rest of the actors we're casting. So again, in TV, if you're coming with a film performance, it's going to be very difficult, you know. You're looking for a precise actor. Often, you know, you work on a... Yeah, I'll just stop right there.
No, it's fine. I do want to follow up to that just a little bit for some of our listeners who may be new to this world of acting. When you refer to television, being prepared for TV and being prepared for film, could you let us know what exactly you mean by that? Can you clarify for us?
TV is measured a great deal by... the instrumental tasks in the audition. Number one, the language is king. You cannot change a word. If it says beat, you better be breathing per that beat. So when I say instrumental tasks, it's looking at the scene and knowing what you need to do body language wise, tempo and pacing wise, and hitting the words cleanly with great articulation so you can hear the words. But if you know the character and it's a humanized character and the language is supposed to be a little bit gruff and a little bit dirty, figure out a way to make it work so we can still hear the enunciation, but in that way. So getting it down to the precise aspect of what's on the page and replicating that.
Gotcha.
Film, for me, is that actor that we wipe. And in TV, we're keeping the camera really tight. Mm-hmm. So the main reason for all that jazz is, number one, we want to see the precision, but we want to make you perform within that window. So there's going to be suggested movement. There's not going to be a ton of behavior. In film, we're going to widen the camera, mm-hmm. and we're going to be thinking about behavior and characterization way more than the language. In TV, two people are kind of talking directly at each other. Obviously, it changes scene to scene, show to show. In film, we often see actors talking out of the side of their mouth during mm-hmm. some action, or the words coming out a little bit more dirtied up or a little bit less clean, you know. So it's very humanistic in most ways, is what we're looking for. And we want it to be just a depiction of real life. Mm-hmm. Not to say that television doesn't have that same film-friendly energy, but the precision is also is so much more important, I think, with that. When mm-hmm. in film, you can kind of look at an audition scene and you can kind of really texturize it and bedazzle it in your own kind of way when looking at a scene. And if you're that creative actor that really knows how to bring a ton of yourself or a ton of a character that you know how to, you've worked with and you've developed and played with a lot, and you can just turn it loose, it's really exciting for us to kind of see the different mm-hmm. shades of the people coming in. But in film, it's very garnered in a naturalistic kind of way.
Yeah, no, I totally
grounded
see that.
Appeal, mm-hmm. unless it's a specialized piece, of course.
Right. You know, I was thinking like Game of Thrones. I was like, but what about that? That's kind of like an epic yeah, right. like TV, but it's like more yeah. shot like film.
But that's what you have to do as actors. You have to do your research too. So yeah, if you go in for someone that like did like a sitcom rather than like Game of Thrones, like you yeah, should know like what they've done before
yeah.
and like
yeah, how and their if you're going in for a show that's on TV currently. Watch a couple episodes.
Right.
Yeah, you're going in for a feature film with a casting director or a director, look at some of their stuff and figure it out before you go in, for sure. Right.
Streaming and cable content definitely lean towards the film-friendly audition process that I'm bragging so much about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, more so network TV and some of those bigger shows and specificity.
Sure. Quick little fast-fire question. advice to actors out there. And it could be as general as you want it to be.
I think it's about knowing yourself and definitely putting together a calendar or however you say it, a 2-month plan or whatever, but having a yearly outlook, but then also, you know, every 2 to 3 months, you know, making sure you're meeting certain goals and being realistic in what you do. During certain times of the year, if you're looking for an agent, don't spend time looking for an agent during pilot season. They're all too busy. They don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. There's just different things that you pick up on out here. But I think as far as the creative process goes, know what formats you want to go out for. I think, you know, going for TV and film equally the same is going to be a great thing. I think TV is a great format, and there's a lot more opportunity, and there's such great content out there, and there's a greater payday than most film opportunities. But it's a harder upward climb as far as upward mobility goes when it comes to TV. You can get kind of branded as a co-star actor and a guest star actor and kind of have to work your way up to the series regular. Or right away you can get something great, and then you might have a lull where you're not getting anything for a while. Film, I think, even if it's a short film, if you're doing work opposite notable film actors, that's going to have casting directors and people around town see you to have the ability to be able to do the big guest lead or the series regular role. And so when you work on, say, one of these short films, at the time they were paying $125 or $134 a day, not a payday. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting six pages or even two to three pages with one of these known actors, that's a great piece of tape. It's a great piece of tape for getting an agent. Mm-hmm. If you have a good agent, that agent could utilize that piece to have you be seen higher on the food chain, per se.
Yeah,
you know,
makes total sense.
And I'd love to see actors get the opportunities and advance in their career because they're talented people, and a lot of times that's not the case. So it was a great project.
Excellent.
That's awesome. So one of the last questions, it's how do actors, or how would you like an actor to get on your radar? What is the best way to reach out to contact you? Do you do postcards or like headshots, or what's your take on postcards, first off?
You know, I've come a long way in my career, but I still have this very kind of low budget mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, I often feel like I'm not offering the world too much until we get some cast into the movie. So, you know, I'm very careful on how I put things out in the world, because I don't want people sending a bunch of headshots and things like that. I often man multiple offices. Right now I have 3 offices in particular. So I've always been very digital friendly.
Okay.
And my email is chadwickstruck@gmail.com. It's completely open for anybody to shoot me an email and keep in touch in that regard. And then on Facebook, you can send me Facebook messages. I haven't advanced any further on one of these platforms just that offered me a series earlier today that I'm not a part of, so I need to join this particular platform. I'm just a little bit old school when it comes to the social media pages. Great. And such. But this,
that's awesome. Yeah. Well, Chadwick, on behalf of all of us, thank you so much for being here today.
It was
and
so
giving
good.
The great advice for our listeners, and we appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Mr. Chadwick Strzok, everybody.
And don't forget to share and subscribe for more great content.